technology. I think it's a great one, you know, as a demonstration of computer engineering, because it covers, you know, the whole broad spectrum from hardware and software and system level design. You know, these guys are LPL is a small company that does these open source cameras. They're going to talk a little bit about it. I love this technology. It's really cool. So I'm really happy to have Olga Filipova here again to present. And she, do you want to introduce your coworkers? I know
sure.
I've met them before, but I can't remember your names. I apologize. So.
Andre and Oleg.
Okay, that's
yeah.
right. Andre and Oleg. So
we're pretty much the whole company is here.
Yeah, this is cool stuff. Cool stuff. So yeah, so let's welcome them in.
Hello, everybody. I'm Olga, and I'm with LPL, and I would like to introduce you to our company, which is an open hardware and free software company that was founded in 2001, so we exist for quite a while, here in Salt Lake, and the company was founded with the idea to design and manufacture free software and open hardware cameras. And this idea kind of came to us from being camera users ourselves. Mostly Andrei was working at first in the Moscow Physics Institute in Russia and dealing with cameras and lasers there. And then he started working at the local company doing high-speed photography, extremely high speed for military applications, scientific applications. And from the personal experience he had found is that a lot of proprietary products kind of are very good at what they are doing and can be excellent products, but doing something like experiments, scientific experiments, or trying just to do something different with them would be extremely hard, because this is like a brick wall. You just this is what this product is supposed to do and nothing else. And particularly he was trying to for that in this company, they were trying to connect several cameras to the computer running Windows, and it was back in the 90s. And all the Microsoft paid support couldn't help them figure it out. And then one of the coworkers loaded Debian Linux on the computer, and it took them a month to actually install it. Back then on on an unusual configuration of the computer, something like that, and everybody was new to it. But then it also took them maybe 10 lines of code, and all the problem was solved. The cameras connected, and they could move on with that. So this was kind of a breakthrough, eye-opening for Andre to kind of discover the power of Linux, and also a little bit come back to his prior experience of being a scientific researcher, and also knowing that these are the same principles. You share the knowledge. You don't hide it. You just use what is done by others and move on, and you are able to do a lot more with as a humankind. We kind of don't spend time trying to figure out what others already done, but you can kind of keep going with your ideas based on what have been done before you. So that was the idea to start the company, designing the cameras that will be available for modifications. And at first it was not so easy to, not being a businessman and just mostly engineer and scientist, but at the same time, and also the one of the difficulties is that it's not just pure software, it's hardware, so it requires actual manufacturing. If you design the board, the circuit board, then you made a mistake and pretty much you have to scrap it and start over. So it's a lot more involved monetary-wise rather than doing just purely software. But this is what anyway, Andre is that's his profession, and so he had this idea about the camera and he started doing that. So the first camera was this is like the fifth generation of that camera, but the basic idea was that there will be a system board separate from the sensor board, and the system board will have a FPGA that will be responsible for the image processing and compression, and then there was also a processor that runs Linux, and you can write your own API on this board, on this processor, and then the image sensor is a separate board, and that allows to pretty much connect different sensors and whichever becomes available on the market without modifying the whole camera. It will be just this new sensor. And as I said, first couple of years were really difficult because there was like any startup with all the difficulties with marketing. Most of the marketing, what we did was just publish about the camera in different computer magazines, Linux devices. This is where a lot of our first articles were published. And partially by luck, partially by the product was really good. It caught attention of Google, and they first ordered a couple cameras, toyed with it, and then we got a call from one of the engineers there saying, can you maybe design a camera for us that will be doing the book scanning, the project that they were just starting, scanning the books. And we kind of were not, we thought, well, yeah, they probably asking, but probably not going to hire us. But eventually we were able to compete with major camera manufacturers like Kodak and Canon with in this project because pretty much because of the open source nature of the camera and the features that this, again, proprietary product didn't have, like, what was it? The one of these cameras couldn't download the images fast enough. It would take 12 seconds per image, which is normal, okay, for normal camera usage, but when they were scanning a page a second of the book, then kind of processing these images or downloading them would take so long that it was really slowing down the whole process. And the other problem, I think, was that the mechanical shutter of, again, I forgot, was it Kodak or Canon, of one of these cameras was proposed to for like 50,000 frames, 50,000 times of shutting the electronic shutter, I mean mechanical shutter. So the camera was broken after 50,000 shots. And Google was actually taking these cameras to the repair, warranty repair. It was still under warranty because it was done maybe in less than a month. And finally, the company said, okay, we cannot do this anymore. What's going on? We cannot really warranty repair all these cameras. And so this is when they were probably looking for an alternative. And we were able, so that was in 2003 that they approached us for this design. And in 2004, the Google book scanning project was up and running with these cameras. So the reason why it was also kind of quite a quick development for us is also because from the beginning, the camera was kind of thought through to be high performance but modular structure. So here what we used just two system boards and designed the different sensor boards for a much higher resolution sensor. The original sensor, what was then available, was probably 1 megapixel, and this was 11 megapixel Kodak sensor. And two system boards were able to provide enough speed for image capture and processing. So after that, in parallel, we had other orders which are continuing right now, mostly with universities and scientific research labs, also startup companies, because they also quite often need to do something unusual. They have an idea, they need to test it, they need to be able to write their own software to the camera. And this is kind of, I would say, the majority of our clients up until now, universities and the startup companies. But in parallel, which was very nice, Google decided that they want to use these cameras for the Street View application as well. So we were, from 2003 till 2008, we were busy working with Google and this camera. That's their, I don't know, third maybe generation of Google Street View. This uses the LCL system boards and sensor boards inside, while the overall mechanical design is by Google. So, we were helping them to integrate how to integrate our electronics into the whole camera system. And the other applications I wanted to talk about is just different examples of applications where the camera is used. So it's probably easy to imagine that that would be used a lot in robotics, in machine vision. So this particular robot is the diving under the Antarctic ice robot that provides images of the Antarctic life. It was starts with the Marine Moss Landing Lab, but now the main researcher moved to a different university, and they still keep ordering our cameras for this robot. So originally what this particular project was doing, they had to send a human diver with the camera under the ice, and they had to bring tons of equipment to the Antarctica to drill a hole big enough for the human to dive under the ice. And then they proposed to develop a robot that will be uses one camera for navigation and the other one, so it's fast frame rate and not such a high resolution. And then the other camera is set to be to provide kind of short, high resolution photography or video. And this robot is only like 6 inches in diameter. So they designed it, used our cameras for this project. And ever since then, that's just like all they need is a little drill that is used for ice fishing. And of course, it's pretty long. I don't know, this picture doesn't show. We had another picture which shows the long drill laying on the ice. But it's a quite exciting project for this Antarctica exploration. The other one is that the camera was used on the unmanned airplane, NASA, Global Hawk, for providing near space images of the Earth, about 20 kilometers. So they wasn't used for navigation, but for just images. For navigation, this camera is used quite often right now for different quadcopters and this unmanned little flying machines, the drones, not really drones, but mostly the quadcopters. So the image on the right was competing in Russia for the, didn't win, unfortunately, but it was competing for kind of takeoff, and it had to fly certain distance, go through certain obstacles, and then land. So this is another. Then we had also quite an unusual request several times, and this particular one fruited into this open cinema project. This group wanted to do a movie, is a film, completely open source. So they have developed, they use the LFL camera, and they have developed the editing tools that are also free and open source. And they shoot that movie that is about 20 minutes long. It's a feature. Well, it's not a feature. It's but it's a artistic movie, so that was then submitted to some festival. And it's available if anybody is interested on this florestivermela.org. So this is like a... another application is when the camera is providing images of kind of constantly monitoring the weather conditions in the astronomic facility in Finland, I think. And also the other one is in Hawaii doing quite similar. So for the quasar observations, astronomers need to have exact information of the conditions of the sky at the moment. And so the camera is taking these images every 15 minutes for about a couple of years now. yet another application is another robot that is going through the sewer lines. This is a completely practical commercial company that is designing this robot and inspects the sewer lines. And they were actually featured a year ago. President Obama personally congratulated them. They are probably in MIT-based firm. But the camera can be also used as in the different mode when it takes line scan images. So the line scan is pretty much when the camera is not taking the whole full frame, but just like a scanner, just one line. And then these images can be combined in the pretty long 16,000 pixels long frame. And this person is interested in creating these panoramic images of different river sides. This is in Vienna. He did also several in Africa, in Egypt, and using the camera for that. Also, the photo finish mode is the similar application used in sports when the exact moment of who is crossing the line can be determined by this photo finish application. Also using the line scan.
It's like the kid pushing the
front one. Yeah. Well, this was our test, and that was already when when they are using. This is a company in Canada using it a lot for cross-country skiing. Okay, to bore you more, one more application, just one more, in agriculture. So they are using it for, it's again, still in the testing, in like prototype state. But the idea is to selectively remove weeds from the field without using any pesticides or any chemicals, just to make a weeding robot with the use of the camera as well. So it's a lot of different applications, and this really kind of answers what we intuitively were thinking will probably this is what, there is a niche where this camera will be needed, that different users can write their own applications, add certain features, and develop their own products based on the camera. And this is what is mostly happening. So this is a inside of the camera, the board, the system board, as I said, it has the processor running Linux and the FPGA that is responsible for image processing and image compression. There is an extension board that provides different interfaces like SATA, USB, and you can connect different devices with external devices to the camera with this board. The sensor board, using this particular sensor, we use the most, it's a 5-megapixel Aptina sensor. And also the multi-sensor board, because technically one camera can support up to 3 sensors. You need to connect them with this multi-sensor board. It's also a multiplexer board, so there is another, there is also another, the same FPGA field programmable gate array device on this board that developers who are interested in doing more modifications and adding more features on the FPGA level can use that board instead of just compromising something on the main system board. And that allows them to do more with the camera. So with this board, we can assemble the basic camera, which is just system and sensor board, with 2 sensors and multi-sensor. We can make a stereo camera, or later I'll show there is a triclops camera, or the camera that we call Hammer. Is kind of a simple version of a panoramic camera. When with 2 fisheye lenses, you can create a full 360-degree view. This other cameras, as I said, you can attach like recording, for recording maybe hard drive or SSD to the camera. And also you can add IMU, inertial measurement units, and GPS to provide camera's position and orientation. For example, these are the example configurations of the camera. Since most of our clients are, a lot of them are scientists and not professional programmers, we are trying to design the camera so it's not only available for modifications, but it's also quite easy. So we use the PHP language in the camera that a lot of non-programmers use also, and they can write custom APIs on this PHP extension. The camera is controlled from the laptop through the web graphic user interface, and you can also, the simplest thing, you can adjust a lot of parameters there. But then the camera is, it's possible to add features and modify the camera on any level, from very top to the very bottom, like FPGA code. And then also the previous screen probably showed that it says source inside. We store all the code inside the camera, so it's shipped with the available code. And also, of course, it's available to download from SourceForge. All the schematics is documented on the wiki. That is also, they can see the all the internals of the camera. The licenses we use is the GNU GPL version 3 at the moment license, free documentation license, and CERN open hardware license that became available a couple of years ago, and we started using it because for the hardware there was really no license for a long time, so we had to use the software license applicable to the cameras. So as I mentioned before, that we kind of were hoping that this project will find a good response in the world community, and the camera really is used everywhere on the globe in all seven continents, including Antarctica, and mostly the universities and research labs. And, we think that the high performance, modular structure, and openness, the openness is one of the main features of the camera, as well as the other two.
What's the difference between the green cameras and the black ones?
Okay. Well, this picture is a little bit dated. I need to update it, but the green means pretty much that it's the users that we had time to ask. They agree to be visible, have their name and address.
Names, okay.
Yes.
Got
so
it.
They sometimes we
contact them and ask
right.
Them about
we
their
can
names
contact them. Other users can contact them, because what happens a lot, because we a small company, we provide all technical support through our support mailing list, which is public, and quite often the questions that people ask, it's like a forum. They we don't we try to answer, but if we can, then other users quite often are able to give an advice about a particular feature or how to do something. So this camera that is out on the market for about 7 years, was several times updated, upgraded due to a flexibility of the FPGA, we were able to keep it current. But still, it is couple years or more, we already been thinking to that it's time to make a newer, more powerful camera, more kind of up to date, and this is what is under development right now. So this camera is going to be based on Xilinx Zynq FPGA, which is also a processor. It's combined, and partially also the we were thinking to design the new camera a long time ago, but these features that we were interested in were not available on any chip. So this finally, the Xilinx came up with that chip that is able to support the new features of the camera. So what we, just to tell you that we have to design the schematics, the PCB layout, this board is, going to be the same form function as the old camera, so we can for a lot of our clients, they would like to move to the new camera, but they wouldn't really be able to do it easily if it's different in shape, even in size. So we try to keep it the same, and it's really dense. This is 8-layer circuit board. It's really, really packed. What it's packed with is you can read the 1 gigabyte of onboard system memory and 512 megabyte of additional dedicated video FPGA memory. And the old camera had just 64 for each. So it is going to be a lot more powerful with gigabit Ethernet. And the applications for this camera, we propose mostly to be a multi-sensor camera. And I will talk with how we kind of moved from this single sensor camera or maybe stereo camera to more and more we are moving in the direction of cameras with multi-sensor. So like this one that is recording us right now, it's a triclops. So, and I'll talk about this later. But this is the prototype for this new camera. And you can see that there are four sensors attached to that system board. And eventually with the new multiplexer board, it will be able to support 16 eyes of the camera. So I mentioned before that we were providing Google with the with the electronics, our electronics for their panoramic camera. And while working with them, we kind of were not, that several years had passed while waiting for Xilinx chip to arrive. We really wanted to take our own shot at designing a panoramic camera. So this is also not the first model, but this model is a full-sphere panoramic camera, and it's more compact than what was Google making, which is quite important for the panoramic application because the closer you position the lenses, the less parallax you have, and there is more uniform stitching. So Google probably spends a lot of software effort to actually line all the images together. We are trying to do as much as possible in hardware. So the camera is by hardware designed to be specifically useful for the panoramic, and also we propose the 3D reconstruction application. So eventually, it's a huge amount of software to develop, actually, but the camera is photogrammetry ready, meaning that it can measure distances to the objects and provide all the 3D information about objects in space. So it would be really cool to have panoramas in 3D, high-resolution panoramas in 3D. So this is what we are aiming for. This is the camera kind of mechanical schematic design. It uses pretty much the same electronics, the same system board. It just has 24 sensors and sensor boards in the camera head with 24 lenses. And two more lenses are also in the bottom of the camera. Aiding in 3D reconstruction. All the system boards and multiplexers are stored in that camera pole, and you need the pole anyway to put it high on the car or on the person. So there is quite a bit of mechanical design involved in this project, and we also had to work specifically on sensor lens module to make sure that it is thermally compensated, and after it's been adjusted to certain focal distance, it stays the same, it doesn't shift, and pretty much you take the camera out in the hot weather, and if it's not thermally compensated and secured in this, then the focus can totally shift. this is what the camera sees when it takes the images, the position of the sensors that are, there are eight around the, and eight on top and eight on the bottom. And the total resolution is, after stitching the images, is 64 megapixels. And so far, it's the highest resolution panoramic camera that is available. So this is also that window is how you start when you start using it and recording in the car, for example, on your laptop. This is what you see, and you can adjust different parameters, the exposure, white balance, the frame rate, compression. All of that can be adjusted before recording. Sometimes that has to actually, there is a little bit of a learning curve what weather conditions outside are better for what parameters. So that's something that we offer to our clients to actually tutor for a couple of days if they want to learn how to use the camera. So it's also web-based GUI. And this is the stitched image in the equirectangular projection that is meant to be shown on the globe, on the sphere. And after this presentation, if we can connect to the internet, we can show how it all operates, how it rotates on the sphere. So this panorama, because the camera is calibrated with high precision to be able to automatically stitch all the images. So that I'll talk a little bit more later how it's calibrated. But the idea is that each lens position and orientation in the camera head is precisely known. So then when all these images are taken and the camera is moving and sometimes tilting, then it all can be still combined into one one image, and it's done in the post-processing. So after we downloaded the images, then the post-processing software can create panoramas out of the images. We have also developed this panorama viewer editor. Technically, it was already developed by somebody else, the viewer, but then we added the editor part, which allows to manually adjust the orientation and position of the camera and like level it to the horizon, orient it towards the compass, so towards the north, south, west, and also to kind of put them into a sequence, because we know the position of the camera on the map, and it's integrated with the maps. Could be Google Maps, could be OpenStreetMap, and then also to be able to kind of move from camera to camera. You can see it like that, or you can remove the cameras and just leave little spots on the ground. But this is kind of a way to kind of to go through the that scene. And at each place, of course, you can stop and turn around and look around yourself. So this was the previous model, and we took it to the southern Utah on a backpack to do just some hiking with the camera in pretty places. This is how the camera can be integrated with maps, as I said. And also, this particular image shows that this is our state capital done with ISIS Popeye camera. And this was done with the previous version of Google was using the Ladybug camera done by other company when they were doing Salt Lake. I think since then they have rescanned it and the quality is better. But at that moment, we could use it for marketing purposes to show that our quality is better. how do we get to the actually really high resolution images? I'm going to talk a little bit about that. But all of that is done in post processing. But before that, the camera has to be calibrated, and there should be the calibration files generated for each camera that then you can use to correct and correct the images using this file. So one of the corrections we do is the correction for aberration correction of the lenses and selective image sharpening. So like on this big image, there is like some feature that might be interesting, and it's not very sharp originally, but with this aberration correction processing, we can increase the sharpness significantly, so it's readable, and also it's different from the regular like image sharpening in Photoshop or GIMP by that you selectively. So we don't want to sharpen the whole image because it kind of creates a lot more artifacts in the picture. But mostly we're trying to sharpen the thin lines, windows, letters. So something that there is a change of value. First, to do this aberration correction, we start with adjusting precisely the lens to the sensor, and that is done with this lens adjustment machine that we also designed, and we use actually one of our own cameras to as a controller board to control this machine. So it's pretty much designed this pattern, which is different than checkerboard pattern. It just doesn't create this, what is it called? It works better than just a regular checkerboard pattern because it doesn't create this artifact when the camera is taking images of this pattern. So what we adjust at first is that we would like to align and center the center of the sensor and the center of the lens. And also each sensor and each lens has a little tilt in its surface. So this also we try to position them parallel as much as possible to each other. So that's the first step that we're looking at. And then this this pattern is kind of divided in, for example, 40 areas where we can measure the point spread function of each lens. And what I should mention from the beginning is that the difference between using cameras as a single lens camera and panoramic application is that most of the lenses are designed to be really good in the center, focus-wise, and towards the edges, it's more blurry and not as sharp. And it works usually fine for normal photography, but in the panoramic application, there is really no center. You kind of look at everything, and you want to have this uniform resolution all over the image. And all of these things we're kind of discovering as we go. That you kind of embark on a project and then you think, oh yeah, this is what we need to do now. So what we are trying to achieve here is like this picture is showing how first you just select the lenses, and you can see that most of them are sharp in the center and kind of blurred and also stretched in the corners. And so the first thing we do is when we receive a batch of lenses from China, usually, we select about half of them, the best ones, because each lens is slightly different. And some of them are same serial number, but some of them are better, some of them are worse. And then we go through the process of taking this knowing the aberrations for each particular lens and creating this calibration file that later on in the post-processing we can apply, and we know how to correct each image done by each lens. So as a result, we can have that sharpening. Then the other thing that we also had to correct for distortions of the lens. So each lens has either pincushion distortion or barrel distortion, and the most obvious distortion that everybody can visualize is the distortion of a fisheye lens. The actual lenses that are supposed to give you a flat image, they have a more complicated distortion than pincushion or barrel. It's usually a combination of both, and it's kind of not uniform all over the place. So we're also compensating for that. And for that, we have designed this, what we call goniometer machine. It also uses that same pattern. And it takes about 1,000 images of the pattern because there are so many lenses. what it does, it provides this position of each lens in the camera head. So that is needed for later on stitching of the panoramas. And also it calibrates each lens, so it, we can assign kind of a rain space from the center of the lens towards the certain pixel in this pattern. This is all done by, as I said, taking about 1,000 images of the pattern, of different areas of the pattern, and then about 100,000 lines of code to actually calculate all the different parameters, like taking in account the differences of each lens, its position, its own distortions, its so the differences of each lenses are accounted in this process. Also, this camera has to have the GPS and IMU, the inertial measurement unit, to be able to provide the orientation of the camera when it's moving, when it's taking pictures. So while this, we do the calibration of the optical elements, we also can calibrate the IMU, because we know exactly the angle and the angle of the rotation of this machine, and we can kind of correct or see how accurate the IMU measurements are. And this inertial measurement unit also is not going to provide the the camera's position and orientation, but also it can correct for the inherited problem of the electronic rolling shutter, that is the image sensor that we use is not a snapshot shutter, but electronic rolling shutter, which is, by its name, you can guess that it takes, it doesn't take the full frame at once, but just scans it line by line. So when you have, it's probably the same as you have in your cell phone, when you take a moving, take a picture of a moving object, it's good. This is the kind of example of the what happens with the fast moving object when you just take an image of it. But since the electronic roll, I mean, the IMU takes about 2,500 images, samples per second, and it's about every 50th line of this shot can be known its position, then we can also correct something like this in the post-processing. Of course, we cannot correct the objects that are moving, but we can provide corrections for the camera itself if it was moving fast, because it's on the car, you know, it's like 60 miles per hour sometimes that the camera is moving, or if it's rotating sharply. So that's another area of development. We have presented this camera at the SIGGRAPH 2 years ago. SIGGRAPH is a special interest group for graphics and interactive techniques. So this is where the Pixar and Autodesk were our neighbors, and mostly for computer graphics. But since everybody is moving into direction, like gaming industry, everything is moving into direction of 3D reconstruction, 3D reconstruction of the physical world. This is what we were presenting our camera as, a photogrammetry camera, that it can, with all this calibration that we've done, it can actually know the distances to the object and provide this 3D information. And we demonstrated the whole calibration process. So our booth was designed to be kind of a mini mobile calibration facility. And then we actually used it later on when we were designing our new office. And while in the process of moving, we still had to calibrate cameras, we could use our that booth and do the calibrations. Of course, we didn't have to hang the panorama ones, but the pattern and the calibration machine we could just put anywhere, like in this room, and calibrate the camera. Yes, this is the panoramic shot of our office. You guys are welcome to visit, by the way. It's local. We can explain more of what we are doing. That's the simple representation of what we propose to do for the 3D reconstruction. So with knowing precisely each camera's position in two different spots or more, two different shots taken or several different shots taken, you can create the stereo pair and reconstruct the 3D information even to very distant objects like faraway mountains, because with the normal stereo pair, you're kind of limited by the distance between two lenses. But since we can take a camera at faraway distance apart, and that will allow us to do the 3D reconstruction of the really faraway objects. And I mentioned before, just a little bit more technical details, that there are a couple extra lenses on each camera pole that to assist in the initial understanding of the between the top camera and the bottom camera, you can create that stereo pair and start getting information, photogrammetric information or 3D information of the nearby objects that are within the view of these two cameras. The interesting thing that once you have reconstructed the 3D scene or mesh, you can use you can create really high dynamic range image, because normally if you know, most of the cameras are not as high dynamic range as our eye, so the shadows are dark, or the light, the well-lit areas are too bright. And if the camera is moving, you have to either take two shots immediately, one after another, very fast, and then combine them. Well, especially if the camera is constantly moving, then you cannot combine these two images. But if we already have the 3D mesh constructed, then we can apply the underexposed shot and the overexposed shot on the same mesh and create this well-lit scene with high dynamic range. This is something that cinema people at SIGGRAPH were really, really interested in. Let's keep asking us if this feature is already available. This, unfortunately, all of that, like, we are mostly hardware company, and all of this, what I'm talking about, most of it requires a lot of programming and really a lot of development. So we're kind of designing the hardware and moving in the direction of this 3D reconstruction and IMU development, but definitely there's more work to do than we possibly can. Another idea was with the calibrated lenses and using several lenses and sensors rather than one big high-resolution lens is also for the cinematographic industry. Since pretty much you can develop something that is very valued in cinema is the depth of field, when you have some objects in focus and other not as important objects are kind of out of focus. And this is this artistic feature that when we thought about it was kind of an early representation of 3D world before there was any idea of reconstructing 3D world. That was kind of giving us the perception of depth, of like, this is not a flat picture, this is, kind of coming from the other end to it, you can create that effect, and also you can created in post-processing, and you can actually select which particular object you want to be in focus and which are blurred later on in editing. So with this three shots taken simultaneously by the three lenses at a known distance, fixed distance between each other, we can create this, obtain the 3D information of the scene. At least we can obtain the distance quite easily. That's what we already can do. And then in also there will be a demo that I probably will have time to present that can show how we can pretty much choose which plane we would like to focus on, right? In this scene, we would like obviously to focus on the child and the dog. And the further away from this plane in distance, the blurrier the objects are. But this is pretty much, this is all done only, that blurriness you can see, it's only the doubling or tripling of the images because they don't overlap on the same because of the parallax. But that is something that we're proposing for the cinema industry. This camera is about to be built, the first prototype that is actually an extended version of the Triquops. It's seven triples. And this is actually way above my head. Why do we need seven triples? But at least it will combine, we can create this 3D information, but also the image can be really huge. We can provide like really high resolution video. And the new camera system board that I was talking about earlier, the 393 camera that we're also developing in parallel, this will be able to support the actual image, the high resolution image like that for this camera. So this is what they call in cinema 6K resolution. So it's more than what you can go and see right now in the cinema, in the film, in the movies. So, and that traditionally is done with really large camera, really large lens, very big sensor, and we're proposing a totally different approach that it will be done with multi-sensor and pretty much standard, more or less cell phone quality cameras. One other kind of development that we had to, I didn't even have too much to put on this slide, but because of all this involvement so much with cameras and high-resolution imagery and trying to find small form factor lens, it's really not, none of them correspond to our panoramic or stitching applications because of that not non-uniform resolution of each lens. So we are embarking also on designing our own lens for specifically for this kind of application. And that, again, one more project that we're currently working on. Just listing all the projects that the largest ones that we're working on and you guys are interested, you can visit us in our office. We can show some of this in person, the cameras, what they can do, the processing. And that's about it. That's all about it. I kind of started off the open source and open hardware nature of our company, and that is still a major part of our business model. And it's still really valued by all of our clients. But we just, I just got much more into the technical details of the panoramic application. But it is, again, everything is, everything that is developed and out on the market is available, like schematic design, mechanical design, source code, everything is available for viewing, modifying, taking off in your direction.
Any questions before we just kind of end the demo?
Demo, поставим. Yeah. Oh, say it again, please. When Google?
GoPro.
That's a popular camera, but I think our clients are different. It's different areas. Yeah, I don't think we really noticed that much of an impact on our. I know some of our. It's quite often mentioned that camera, but it has its own niche, I think.
So is most of your revenue coming from the camera hardware and the boards?
Well, the camera product, pretty much.
Okay.
So the camera, the all of them have like the software that is needed to be running the camera. The small cameras, of course, have more software developed because they're just older and we were able to do a lot more with them. But the panoramic cameras are able to do panoramic images. There is no application written yet, no software written for the actual 3D reconstruction. But this is what our partners in Switzerland are actually working on. So I don't know how long it will take them, or maybe some other company also. So yeah.
So you said you're mostly a hardware company. The cameras you sell, do people end up doing a lot of the customization? Where do they add their own hardware as well?
Mostly through software. It's a lot easier for most of the people to do software. People, companies, universities, anybody, it's mostly software, but it's not a limitation. They can add their own hardware if they want to. Like, for example,
because they're all open scanners, in many cases, we don't know what our customers do with them. Because they don't need us to, sometimes they ask, can you make us custom? We're like, no, we don't make it custom. We start with right away our scanners to be modifiable without our help. So we're very often somebody gets it and we have no idea what they, but as, because they don't ask us very open,
we do a good
job
knowing
everything about it. Yeah. Yeah, the more successful, the less you hear from
your kind of like,
design fun enough and kind of fixed that it's not going to be screwed. What was it with Google camera? They went under the bridge, under the low bridge, and the camera just fell off. Not at all. This is our own street view done with ISIS for Pi.
This was just a partition of the sun from the GPS and so partition and time. And then so we were lying in there without That's the information on that menu. And then additional sun helps to know where sun should be.
So я не люблю. So it's when just this particular demo just doesn't go step by step. It jumps between certain spots in Salt Lake. So from the state capital, we jumped up to the upper avenues. Wonder if I go back to state capital or would like to get to the downtown Salt Lake. No? How do you do that? Because you probably have to get a different place, right? Ah, yes, we can always go on the map.
It's going to take some time.
Yeah, it's going to take some time because it's connecting through the internet. With this panoramic camera, like, there was a lot of interest.
So just three pictures and the trailer.
So you can decide which object you want to get which object you want to get in focus. You can obviously zoom on the fence, not zoom, but focus on the fence, and then you can see the grid perfectly aligned and in focus, but then everything, other stuff will be blurred.
Yeah, and with this 21 cameras, so like seven cameras are looking to the same direction, and they, but from different points. So this can be used for three construction.
Mm-hmm.
And then three groups of seven looking in different directions. But you can perfectly teach them because you know they're moving different ways from different locations, so they will be paralyzed. But because you have the information already, you can perfectly teach them and eliminate paralyzed. So you can dial make large frame with multiple fences and get to the perfect features of what is 21 landscape and design for. Scalable.
Yeah.
So whatever resolution you need, you just get more.
Yeah, it doesn't go smoothly. Skydiver.
Yeah, it would be interesting because actually, normally when it's on the path, your car always is for fire, and it's designed that the pole is invisible. So if it was like flying in space, it's like your nose. You don't see it. Yeah, but the fire is always visible. But if you drop it before, then it can get a real for fire for some time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this is these are the images that have been post-processed for sharpening, quadration corrections, and then sharpened as a result. And did I click on? Oh, yeah, I clicked on the next, so it's moving to the next. Yeah, it will take some time. Yes.
Have you had any mobile 3D applications with your cameras? You mentioned that you had the parallel camera.
The stereo camera?
It seems like a lot of your mobile applications were just single frame.
What do you mean mobile applications?
Like quad rotors, you had a number of cameras.
Ah.
On quad rotors or the sewer robot.
Okay. Well, the quad, this one that was actually competing, was using the stereo camera. Or I think they were using two cameras. But because they can be precisely synchronized. It can be, it just, if you use just stereo camera and one system board is responsible for two sensors, then the frame rate drops twice.
Right.
But they could use two cameras or, and then keep, yeah, two separate cameras, synchronize them and use them as the.
But you haven't had any problems with the cameras being too large for mobile applications?
Ah, well, what they do, I think, when they order like that, lightweight, we just can supply the camera board without the body, so no external case, and they just integrate it. So it's just the weight of the board. Yeah.
Great. Well, let's
thank you.
That's cool.
Okay, we're going to go late.
That's really cool.
Yeah, just, I realized
that
it was the
same
presentation
as presented in the
video. Oh, you did?
Yeah, before you got
the collaborators. Yeah. But then I thought, okay, since then, we have made more development. And so I have to add a couple of slides for.
Yeah, you can keep busy.
Yeah. It would be really nice to see some of the getting more orders, more interest, because, you know, if we have more projects that we can do.